when her freshman roommate Sandy told her otherwise, that she'd rather have a career than children. The concept was so foreign that she'd initially thought Sandy was kidding. Hope hadn't spoken to Sandy since graduation, but a couple of years ago she'd bumped into her at the mall, with her new baby in tow. Hope guessed that Sandy had no memory of the conversation they'd had in the dorm that night, and Hope hadn't reminded her. But Hope had gone home and cried. How was it that Sandy had a child, but Hope didn't? And her sisters, Robin and Joanna? And now all of her closest friends were either already there or on their way. It made no sense to her. For as long as she could remember, she'd pictured herself pregnant, then holding her newborn infants, marveling at their growth, and wondering whose traits they had inherited. Would they have her nose, or their dad's big feet, or the red hair she'd inherited from her grandmother? Motherhood had always seemed foreordained. But then Hope had always been a planner. She'd had her life charted out by the age of 15. Get good grades, graduate from college, become a registered nurse by 24, work hard at your job and get your career going. Meanwhile, have some fun along the way. You're only young once, right? Hang out with your girlfriends and date some guys without letting anything get too serious. Then, maybe as 30 was approaching, meet the one. Date him. Fall in love and get married. After a year or two, start having children. Two would be perfect, hopefully one of each sex. Though if that last part didn't happen, she knew she wouldn't really be disappointed. As long as she had at least one girl, that is. One by one, through her teens and 20s, she'd checked those things off. And then Josh came along right on schedule. In her wildest dreams, she never would have believed that 6 years later, she'd still be single and childless, and she had trouble figuring out exactly where the plan had gone awry. Josh had told her that he wanted marriage and children as well. So what had they been doing all this time? Where had the 6 years gone? One thing she knew for sure, being 36 was a lot different than being 35. She'd learned that on her birthday last April. Her family was there, Josh was there, and it should have been a happy event. But she'd taken one look at the cake and thought, wow, that's a lot of candles. Blowing them out had seemed to take an inordinately long time. It wasn't the age thing that had bothered her, nor was it that she was closer to 40 than to 30. In spirit, she still felt closer to 25. But the following day, as if God had wanted to smack her in the face with a not-so-gentle reminder, a pregnant 36-year-old had entered the emergency room after slicing her finger while cutting an onion. There was a lot of blood, followed by a local anesthetic and stitches, and the lady had joked that she wouldn't have come in at all, except for the fact that hers was considered a geriatric pregnancy. Hope had heard the term before when she'd been in nursing school, but as a trauma nurse in the ER, she saw a few pregnant women and had forgotten about it. I hate that it's called a geriatric pregnancy, Hope remarked. It's not as if you're old. No, but trust me, it's a lot different than being pregnant in my 20s, she smiled. I have three boys, but we wanted to try for a girl. And? It's another boy, she rolled her eyes. How many kids do you have? Oh, Hope had answered. I don't have any. I'm not married. No worries. You still have time. How old are you? 28? Hope forced a smile, thinking again about the term geriatric pregnancy. Close enough, she responded. Tired of her thoughts, and really, really tired of the pity party, Hope figured a distraction was in order. Since she hadn't bothered to pick up any groceries on her drive down and needed to get out of the house for a while, she first visited a roadside vegetable stand. It was just off the island and had been around for as long as she could remember. She filled a straw basket with zucchini, squash, lettuce, tomatoes, onions, and peppers, then drove to a neighboring island where she purchased some Spanish mackerel. By the time she got back to the cottage, though, she realized she wasn't hungry. After opening the windows, she put the food away, poured herself a glass of wine, and began sorting through more boxes. She tried to be selective, while keeping both Robin and Joanna in mind, condensing down to a small pile of keepsakes that she returned to a single box she stored in the closet. She brought the rest downstairs to the garbage cans, satisfied with her day's work. Scotty had followed her out, and she stayed with him at the front of the house, not wanting to chase him down the beach again. Checking the clock, she fought the urge to call Josh. He was staying at Caesar's Palace, but she reminded herself that if he wanted to talk to her, he knew the number of the cottage. Instead, she thought, why not a little me time? What she really needed was a nap. The lack of sleep the night before had caught up with her. She lay down on the living room couch, and the next thing she knew, it was mid-afternoon. Through the open windows, she could hear the faint sounds of someone playing the guitar and singing. Peeking out the window, she caught a partial glimpse of True through the railings. She listened to the music for a few minutes while she tidied up the kitchen, and despite her gloomy thoughts of earlier, she couldn't help but smile. She couldn't even remember the last time she'd been attracted to someone right off the bat. And then she'd gone and invited him over for coffee. She still couldn't believe she'd done that. After wiping the counters, Hope decided that a long bath was in order. She enjoyed a good bubble bath, but the rush of her daily life made showering easier, so baths were something of a luxury. After filling the tub, she soaked for a long time, feeling the tension slowly ebb from her body. Afterward, she swaddled herself in a bathrobe and pulled a book from the shelf, an old Agatha Christie mystery. She remembered loving the books as a teenager, so why not? Taking a seat on the couch, she settled into the story. It was easy reading, but the mystery was just as good as what she found on television these days, and she got halfway through the book before finally putting it aside. By then, the sun was beginning to dip at the horizon, and she realized she was hungry. She hadn't eaten all day, but she found she wasn't in the mood to cook. She wanted to keep the relaxing flow of the afternoon going. Throwing on some jeans, sandals, and a sleeveless blouse, she did a quick pass with her makeup and pulled her hair back into a messy ponytail. She fed Scotty and let him out in the front yard. He was visibly disappointed when he registered that he wouldn't be going with her, and locked the front door. Then she left the house via the back deck, strode down the walkway, and descended the steps to the beach. Whenever their family had come to Sunset Beach, they'd always eaten at Clancy's at least once, and keeping up the tradition felt right on a night like tonight.
Dinner on the deck. Clancy's was a few minutes' walk past the pier, and True liked the place even before he climbed up to the main deck from the beach. He could hear strains of music intermingled with conversation and laughter. At the top of the stairs was a wooden arch, decorated with white Christmas lights and faded lettering, indicating the restaurant's name. The deck was illuminated by clutches of tiki torches, the flames rippling in the breeze. Peeling bar tables and mismatched stools near the railings framed a cluster of wooden tables in the center, half of them unoccupied. The interior had more seating. The kitchen was located to the left, and the sparsely populated bar area housed a jukebox, which True noted with interest. There was a fireplace as well, with a cannonball on the mantel, and the wall surrounding it was decorated with maritime items. An ancient wooden wheel, a tribute to Blackbeard, and nautical flags. As True surveyed his surroundings, a waitress in her mid-50s emerged through a set of swinging doors carrying a tray of food.
"Take a seat anywhere, inside or out," she called out. "I'll bring you a menu."
The night was too gorgeous to waste inside, so True took a seat at one of the bar tables near the railing, facing the ocean. The moon was hovering just over the horizon, making the water glitter, and he was struck again by the contrast between this place and the world he knew, even if there were fundamental similarities. At night, the bush was dark and mysterious, rife with hidden dangers. The sea struck him as much the same. Though he could swim during the day, the fear of doing so at night resounded within him on some elemental level. The waitress dropped off a menu and hustled back toward the kitchen. From the jukebox, a song came on that he didn't recognize. He was used to that. Often, when riding with guests, he heard them referencing movies and television shows he'd never heard of, and the same went with bands and songs. He knew the Beatles, who didn't, and he favored their songs when playing the guitar, along with a bit of Bob Dylan, Bob Marley, Johnny Cash, Kris Kristofferson, the Eagles, and Elvis Presley, mixed in whenever the mood struck. The song from the jukebox had a memorable hook, though it was a little too synthesizer-driven for his taste. He skimmed the menu, pleasantly surprised by the selection of seafood, in addition to the expected burgers and fries. Unfortunately, most of the seafood was deep-fried. He whittled his decision down to a choice between grilled tuna and pan-fried grouper, before folding the menu and turning his attention to the ocean again. Minutes later, the waitress brought out a tray of drinks, stopping at some nearby tables before retreating inside without so much as a glance in his direction. He gave a mental shrug. He had nowhere to go, and all night to get there. Sensing movement near the gate, he lifted his gaze and was surprised to see Hope stepping onto the deck. They had probably been on the beach at the same time, and for an instant, he wondered whether she'd seen him leave and followed him. He dismissed the thought quickly, wondering why it had come to him at all. He turned toward the water again, not wanting her to catch him staring, but he found himself replaying their visit earlier that morning. Her smile, he realized. He'd really liked the way she smiled.
Hope was amazed at how unchanged the place seemed. It was one of the reasons her dad liked Clancy so much. He used to tell her that the more the world changed, the more comfortable Clancy's felt. But she knew he really liked to come because Clancy served the best lemon meringue pie in the world. Clancy's mother had supposedly perfected the recipe decades earlier and had won blue ribbons at 6 consecutive state fairs, as well as allegedly inspiring the recipe at Marie Callender's, a restaurant chain in California. Whatever the truth, Hope had to admit that a slice of the pie was often the perfect way to end an evening at the beach. There was something about the mixture of sweet and tang that was always just right. She looked around the deck. In all their years coming to the place, she'd never eaten inside, and the thought didn't occur to her now. Near the railings on the right, 3 of the bar tables were occupied. On the left, more were open. She started automatically in that direction, suddenly pausing when she recognized True. Seeing him alone at the table made her wonder about his reason for coming to Sunset Beach. He'd mentioned that he didn't know the man he was supposed to meet, but the trip from Zimbabwe was a long one, and even she knew that Sunset Beach was hardly a destination for international tourists. She wondered who was important enough to make him come all this way. Just then, he opened his hands in greeting. She hesitated, thought, "I have to at least say hello," and walked toward his table. As she drew near, she noticed again the scuffed leather bracelet and the way his shirt was unbuttoned at the top. It was easy to imagine him heading into the bush in just such attire. "Hi, True. I didn't expect to see you here." "Likewise." She expected him to say more, but he didn't. Instead, his eyes held hers a beat too long, and she felt an unexpected twinge of nervousness. He was obviously more at ease with the silence between them than she was, and she tossed her ponytail over her shoulder, trying to exude more calm than she felt. "How was the rest of your day?" she asked.
"Relatively uneventful. I went for a swim. You?"
"Did a little grocery shopping and puttered around the house. I think I heard you playing the guitar earlier."
"I hope it wasn't a nuisance."
"Not at all," she said. "I enjoyed what you were playing."
"That's good, since you'll likely hear the same songs over and over."
She surveyed the other tables, then nodded at his menu. "Have you been waiting long?"
"Not too long. The waitress seems busy."
"Service has always been a little slow here. Friendly, but slow. Like everything else in this part of the world."
"It does have its charms."
He gestured at the seat across from him.
"Would you like to join me?"
As soon as he asked, she recognized it for the telling moment it was. Offering a neighbor a cup of coffee after he'd rescued her dog was one thing. Having dinner with him was something else entirely. Spontaneous or not, this had the makings of a date, and she suspected that True knew precisely what was going through her mind. But she didn't answer right away. Instead, she studied him in the flickering light. She remembered their walk and their conversation on her deck. She thought about Josh and Las Vegas and the argument that had resulted in her being at the beach alone.
"I like that," she finally said, realizing how sincerely she meant it.
He stood as she pulled out her stool, then helped her adjust its position. By the time he returned to his own seat, she felt like someone else entirely. The thought of what she was doing left her slightly off kilter, and she reached for the menu, as if it would ground her.
"May I?"
"By all means."
She opened the menu, feeling his gaze on her.
"What are you having?"
she asked, thinking small talk would tame her butterflies.
"Either the tuna or the grouper. I was going to ask the waitress which one is better, but maybe you know."
"The tuna is always delicious.
It's what my mom orders when she comes here. They have a deal with a few of the fishermen around here, so it's fresh every day."
"Tuna it is,"
he concurred.
"That's what I should do. The crab cakes are really delicious, too, but they're fried."
"So?"
"They're not good for me. Or my thighs."
"Seems to me that you don't have anything to worry about. You look lovely."
She said nothing to that. Instead, she felt the blood rise in her cheeks, aware that another line had just been crossed. As flattered as she was, it definitely felt like a date now. There was no way on earth she could have foreseen any of this, and she tried to concentrate on the menu, but the words seemed to jump around. She finally set it aside.
"I assume you decided on the crab cakes,"
he asked.
"How did you know?"
"Habit and tradition often render change undesirable."
His response brought to mind an upper-class Englishman ensconced in a wood-paneled library at his country estate, an image utterly incongruous with a man sitting across from her.
"You certainly have a unique turn of phrase," she remarked with a smile.
"I do."
"You can definitely tell you're not American."
He seemed amused by that.
"How's Scotty doing? Still moving around?"
"He's back to his rambunctious self, but I think he was mad at me for not bringing him out to the beach again, or at least disappointed."
"He does seem to enjoy chasing the birds."
"As long as he doesn't catch them. If he did, he probably wouldn't know what to do."
The waitress approached, seeming less harried than she'd been earlier.
"Have you two decided what you'd like to drink?"
she asked.
True looked over at Hope, and she nodded.
"I believe we're ready to order,"
he said. He gave the waitress their food orders and asked if the restaurant had any local beers on tap.
"Sorry, sweetheart," the waitress answered. "Nothing fancy here and nothing on tap. Just Budweiser, Miller, and Coors, but the bottles are ice cold."
"I'll try a Coors then," he said.
"And you?"
she asked, turning to Hope. It had been years since she'd had a beer, but for some reason it sounded strangely appealing right now, and she definitely needed something to ease her anxiety.
"I'll have the same," she said, and the waitress nodded, leaving them alone at the table.
Hope reached for her napkin and set it in her lap.
"How long have you been playing the guitar?" she asked.
"I started when I was apprenticing to become a guide. One of the men I was working with used to play at night when we were at the camp. He offered to give me some lessons. The rest I just picked up over the years. Do you play?"
"No, I took a few piano lessons when I was a kid, but that's it. My sister can play, though."
"You have a sister?"
"Two," she said. "Robin and Joanna."
"Do you see them often?"
She nodded. "We try. The whole family lives in Raleigh, but it's harder these days to get everyone together except on holidays or birthdays. Both Robin and Joanna are married and they work, and their kids keep them constantly on the go."
"My son Andrew is the same way."
The waitress dropped off the two bottles of beer from a tray filled with other drinks. Hope tilted her head in surprise.
"I didn't know you had a son."
"He's 10. Because of my work schedule, he lives with his mother most of the time."
"Your work schedule?"
"I work for 6 weeks straight, then go home for 2 weeks."
"That has to be hard for both of you."
"Sometimes it is,"
he agreed.
"At the same time, it's all he's ever known, so I tell myself that he's used to it. And we have a lot of fun when we're together.
He wasn't pleased when he learned that I would be coming here for a week. Have you spoken with him since you've been here? No, but I'm planning to call him tomorrow. What's he like? Curious, bright, handsome, kind. But I'm biased. He grinned and took a sip of his beer. You should be. He's your son. Does he want to become a guide one day, too? He says he does, and he seems to enjoy spending time in the bush as much as I do. But then again, he also says he wants to drive race cars, and be a veterinarian, and maybe a mad scientist. She smiled. What do you think? He'll make his own decision in the end, like we all do. Being a guide means leading an unconventional life, and it's not for everyone. It's also one of the reasons my marriage ended. I just wasn't around enough. Kim deserved better. It seems like you and your ex get along well. We do, but she's easy to get along with, and she's a marvelous mother. Hope reached for her beer, impressed by the way he spoke about his ex, thinking it said as much about him as it did about her. When do you fly back? Monday morning. And you leave? Sometime on Sunday. I have to work on Monday. When is your meeting? On Saturday afternoon. He took a drink before slowly lowering the bottle to the table. I'm supposed to meet my father. Do you mean visit? No, he answered. I mean meet for the first time. According to the letter I received, he moved from Zimbabwe before I was born, and he learned of my existence only a short time ago. Hope opened her lips, then closed them again. After a moment, she ventured, I can't imagine not knowing my father. Your mind must be going 100 miles an hour. I admit it's an unusual circumstance. Hope shook her head, still trying to grasp what he'd told her. I wouldn't know how to start that conversation, or even what to ask him. I do. For the first time, True glanced off to the side. When he spoke again, his voice was almost lost in the sound of the rolling waves. I'd like to ask him about my mother. She hadn't expected that, and pondered what he could mean. She thought she saw a flash of sadness in his expression, but when he faced her again, it was gone. It seems we both have memorable weekends ahead, he observed. His desire to change the subject was obvious, and she played along, despite her growing curiosity. I just hope it doesn't rain. Ellen would probably burst into tears. You mentioned you're a bridesmaid. I am, and thankfully the dress is actually pretty stylish. Dress? The bridesmaids wear matching dresses picked out by the bride, and sometimes the bride doesn't have the greatest sense of style. You sound like you speak from experience. This is the 8th time I've been a bridesmaid, she sighed. 6 friends and both my sisters. I've liked maybe 2 of the dresses. What happens if you don't like the dress? Nothing, except you'll probably hate the photos for the rest of your life. If I ever get married, I might pick ugly dresses just to get back at some of them. He laughed, and she realized she liked the sound of it, deep and rumbly, like the beginnings of an earthquake. You wouldn't do that. I might. One of the dresses was lime green, with puffy shoulders. That one was actually for my sister Robin's wedding. Joanna and I still tease her about it. How long has she been married? 9 years, she said. Her husband Mark is an insurance broker, and he's kind of quiet, but very nice. And they've got 3 boys. Joanna has been married to Jim for 7 years. He's an attorney, and they have 2 little girls. Sounds like you're all very close. We are, she said. And we live near each other, too. Of course, depending on traffic, it can still take 20 minutes to get to each other's houses. It's probably nothing like where you're from. The big cities like Harare and Bulawayo have traffic issues, too. You'd be surprised. She tried to imagine the cities, but couldn't. I'm embarrassed to admit it, but when I think of Zimbabwe, all I can picture are those nature shows on cable. Elephants and giraffes. Things like that. What you see every day. I know there are cities there, but anything I imagine is probably wrong. They're like all cities, I suppose. There are nice neighborhoods and others where you probably shouldn't go. Do you feel culture shock going from the bush to the city? Every single time. It still takes me a day or two to get used to the noise and traffic and number of people. Part of that, though, is because I was raised on a farm. Your mom was a farmer? My grandfather. How does a kid who grew up on the farm end up being a guide? That's a long and complicated story. The good ones usually are. Care to share? As she asked, the waitress arrived with her meals. True had finished his beer and ordered a second one. Hope followed his lead. The food smelled delicious, and this time the waitress was prompt with the drinks, returning with two more beers before either had taken a bite. True raised his bottle, indicating that she should do the same. Two enchanted evenings, he said simply before clinking his bottle to hers. Maybe it was the formality of a toast amid the informality of Clancy's, but she realized that at some point, her nervousness had slipped away without her even noticing it. She suspected it had to do with True's authenticity, and it reinforced her impression that too many people spent their lives performing a role they thought they were supposed to play, as opposed to simply being who they were. Back to your question. I don't mind speaking on the subject, but I wonder if it's appropriate for dinner. Perhaps later. Sure, she shrugged. She sliced off a piece of crab cake and took a bite. Amazing, as always. Noticing True had sampled his tuna, she asked, How is it? It's flavorful, he said. Yours? It's going to be hard not to eat both of them, but I have to get into the dress this weekend. And it is one of the stylish ones. She was flattered that he seemed to remember everything she told him. Over dinner, they settled into a conversation replete with familiar stories. She told him a little about Ellen, describing some of her friend's devil-may-care exploits, while whitewashing the worst parts of her past, like the drug-dealing ex. She mentioned her other sorority sisters as well, the talk eventually drifting to Hope's family. She told him what it had been like to grow up with teachers for parents, both of whom insisted that their children learn how to schedule and complete their homework on their own without help. She described running cross-country and track, expressing her admiration for the deft way her dad had handled coaching all of his daughters. She reminisced about baking cookies with her mom. She talked about her work, too, the fierce energy of her days in the emergency room, and the patients and families who touched her heart. Though there were times when images of Josh broke into her thoughts, they were surprisingly few and far between. As they talked, the stars slowly spread throughout the sky. Breakers sparkled in the moonlight, and the breeze picked up slightly, carrying the briny scent of the sea. The tiki torches sputtered in the breeze, casting an orange glow over the tables while other patrons drifted in and out. The ambiance grew quieter, more subdued as the evening progressed, conversations interrupted only by muted laughter, and the same song cycling from the jukebox. After their plates were cleared, the waitress came by with two slices of lemon meringue pie, and it took True only a single bite to understand that she hadn't been exaggerating when touting its virtues. While they lingered over dessert, he did most of the talking. He spoke about the various camps where he'd worked, and told her about his friend Romy, and the way Romy would sometimes badger him to play his guitar after their long day was over. He told her a bit more about his divorce from Kim, and spoke for a long time about Andrew. She could tell by the longing in his voice that True already missed him, and it made her think again how much she wanted a child of her own. She sensed in True a comfort level with who he was, and the life he'd chosen, but it was balanced by a genuine uncertainty as to whether he was good enough as a father. She supposed that was normal, but his honesty about all of it seemed to deepen the intimacy between them. She wasn't used to that, especially with a stranger. More than once, she found herself unconsciously leaning across the table in order to hear him better, only to pull herself upright when she realized what she was doing. Later, when he laughingly recounted how terrified he'd been when they had first brought Andrew home from the hospital, she felt an unexpected surge of warmth toward him. That he was handsome, there was no question. But for a moment, it was easy for her to imagine their dinner conversation,
as the start of a lifetime of unending conversations between them. Feeling foolish, she dismissed the thought. They were temporary neighbors, nothing more. But the feeling of warmth persisted, and she was conscious of blushing more than usual as the evening wore on. When the check arrived, True reached for it automatically. Hope offered to split it, but True shook his head, simply saying, "Please, allow me." By then, a ball of clouds had formed in the eastern sky, partially obscuring the moon, but they continued to talk as the last of the tables cleared out. When they finally rose from their seats, Hope glanced at True, surprised by how relaxed she felt. They meandered to the gate, Hope watching as he held it open for her, suddenly certain that dinner with True was the perfect way to cap off one of the more surprising days of her life.
A Walk in the Dark. After interacting with thousands of guests over the years, True had become adept at reading people. When Hope reached the beach and turned toward him, he noticed an aura of contentment that had been lacking when they'd first locked eyes in the restaurant. He'd sensed caution and uncertainty then, maybe even worry, and though it would have been easy for him to conclude the initial pleasantries in a way that left no hard feelings, he hadn't. For some reason, he'd suspected that eating alone wouldn't help her overcome whatever demon she was wrestling with. "What are you thinking about?" she inquired, her drawl sounding melodic to his ears. He heard a faraway look there for a moment. "I was thinking about our conversation. I probably talked too much." "Not at all." Reprising their morning routine, they walked the beach side by side, the pace even more leisurely now. "I enjoyed learning about your life." "I don't know why. It's not all that exciting." "Because you interest me," he thought. But he didn't say that. Instead, he zeroed in on what she hadn't mentioned all night. "What's your boyfriend like?" By her expression, he knew she was thrown by the question. "How did you know I had a boyfriend?" "You mentioned that he gave you Scotty as a gift." "Oh, that's right. I did say that, didn't I?" She pursed her lips for a second. "What do you want to know?" "Anything you want to tell." She felt her sandals sinking into the sand. "His name is Josh, and he's an orthopedic surgeon. He's smart and successful. And he's a nice guy." "How long have you been dating?"
6 years.
"Sounds serious."
"Yeah," she agreed, but to his ears it sounded almost like she was trying to convince herself.
"I assume he's coming to the wedding."
She walked a few paces before answering. "Actually, he isn't. He was supposed to, but he decided to go to Las Vegas with some friends instead." She offered a half smile, one that betrayed her unhappiness. "Right now, we're kind of on the outs. But we'll figure it out, I'm sure." Which explained why she'd said nothing about him at dinner.
"Still, I'm sorry to hear that, and for bringing it up."
As she nodded, True noticed something skittering in the sand directly in front of him.
"What was that?" he asked.
"That's a ghost crab," she said, sounding relieved by the distraction. "They come out at night from their burrows in the sand, but they're harmless."
"Are there a lot of them?"
"Between here and the house, it wouldn't surprise me if we saw 100 of them."
"Good to know."
Ahead of them lay the pier, looking forlorn and deserted in the darkness. Offshore, True noticed lights from a distant fishing trawler, a deep span of black water separating it from the beach. "Can I ask you a personal question now?"
"Of course," he answered.
"Why do you want to ask your father about your mother? Does it have anything to do with the reason you became a guide?" He smiled at her perceptiveness.
"As a matter of fact, it does."
He tucked a hand in his pocket, wondering where to start before deciding to just come out with it.
"I want to ask my father about my mother, because I realize I've never known who she really was, what she enjoyed, what made her happy or sad, what she dreamed about. I was only 11 years old when she died."
That's terrible, she murmured. You were so young.
So was she, he countered. She was still a teenager when she had me. Had her pregnancy occurred a couple of years later, it probably would have been more of a scandal. But it wasn't long after the war, and she wasn't the only young lady to have fallen for a former soldier after the war ended. More than that, we were kind of cut off from the rest of civilization because of where we lived. So supposedly, no one aside from the workers at the farm even knew about me for a long while. My grandfather preferred to keep it quiet. People eventually found out, but by then it was old news. Besides, my mother was still young and beautiful, and as the daughter of a wealthy man, she was considered quite desirable. But as I said, I don't feel as though I knew her. Her name was Evelyn, but I never heard them talk about her, or even speak her name after she died. Them? My grandfather. And Rodney, my stepfather. Why not? True watched another ghost crab scurry past. Well, I'll have to provide some context and history to answer that question properly. He sighed as she looked at him expectantly. Back when I was still a young boy, there was another farm that bordered ours, with lots of good, fertile land and ready access to water. At that time, tobacco was quickly becoming the most profitable crop to farm, and my grandfather was intent on controlling as much of the production as he could. He was ruthless when it came to business. The neighbor discovered just how ruthless when he turned down my grandfather's offer to buy his farm, and my grandfather diverted a lot of the water from the neighbor's land to his own.
That sounds illegal.
It probably was, but my grandfather knew the right people in the government, so he got away with it. And while that made things immeasurably more difficult for the neighbor's property manager was something of a genius. It was also common knowledge that he was interested in my mother. So my grandfather eventually made the property manager an offer he couldn't refuse, an ownership stake in our farm, and daily proximity to my mother. And he came to work for us. His name was Rodney.
The man who became your stepfather?
True nodded. After he came on, our tobacco yield doubled almost immediately. At the same time, when the neighbor's farm began to fail, my grandfather offered the neighbor a loan when no one else would. It only postponed the inevitable. And in the end, my grandfather foreclosed, which meant he got all the property for next to nothing. He then diverted the water back to its original flow pattern, making him even richer than he already was. All of that took a few years, and in the meantime, my mother fell for Rodney's charms. They got married and had twins, Alan and Alex, my half-brothers. Everything had worked out just the way my grandfather and Rodney had planned. But not long after that, our family compound went up in flames. I jumped out of a second-story window, and Rodney rescued the twins, but my mother never made it out. He heard her inhale. Your mum died in a fire. The investigators suspected arson.
The neighbor? She said.
Those were the rumors. I didn't hear them until a few years later. But I think my grandfather and Rodney knew, and they felt guilty about what happened. After all, they may well have been indirectly responsible for my mother's death. After that, it was like a hush fell over her memory. And neither Rodney nor my grandfather seemed to want anything to do with me. So I started to go my own way. I can't imagine how hard that was. It must have been an incredibly sad and lonely time for you.
It was.
And the neighbor got away with it. True stopped to pick up a seashell, a partially broken conch she examined before tossing it aside. The neighbor died in a house fire a year after my mother died. At the time, he was living in a shack in Harare, completely destitute, but I didn't find out about that until years later. My grandfather mentioned it in passing one night when he'd been drinking. He said the man got what he deserved. By then, I was already guiding. Glancing at Hope, he watched her put the pieces together. Did anyone ever suspect your grandfather?
I'm sure they did. But if you were white and wealthy in Rhodesia, justice could be purchased. Maybe not as much these days, but back then, it could. My grandfather died a free man. These days, Rodney and my half-brothers run the farm, and I keep my distance from them as much as possible. He watched as Hope shook her head, trying to absorb it all. Wow, she said. I don't think I've ever heard a story like that. I can understand why you left, and why you didn't tell me earlier. It's a lot to think about. It is, he agreed. Are you certain the man you're supposed to meet this weekend is your actual father? No, but I think there's a pretty good chance. He told her about the letter, and the photograph he'd received along with the plane tickets. Does the photo resemble your mum? From what I can recall, but I suppose I can't be 100% sure. All the photographs of her were lost in the fire, and I didn't want to ask Rodney about it. She appraised him carefully, with new respect. You've had a hard life already. In some ways, he shrugged. But I also have Andrew. Did you ever think about having another child, when you were married? Kim wanted more, but I ended up contracting measles, which left me sterile, so I couldn't. Was that a factor in the divorce? He shook his head. No, we were just two different people. We probably shouldn't have married in the first place, but she was pregnant, and I knew what it was like to grow up without a father. I didn't want that for Andrew. I know you said you don't remember much about your mom, but is there anything you do remember? I remember that she used to sit on the back veranda and draw, but the only reason I remember that is because I started to sketch too, not long after she passed away. You draw? When I'm not playing the guitar. Are your drawings any good? Andrew likes them. Do you have any here? I started one this morning. There are others too in my sketchbook. I'd like to see them, if you wouldn't mind. By then, the pier was long behind them, and they were drawing closer to both the cottage and the home where he was staying. Beside him, Hope had grown quiet, and he knew she was digesting everything he'd told her. It wasn't like him to share so much. Usually he volunteered little about his past, and he wondered what it was about tonight that had made him so voluble. But deep down he already knew that his reaction had everything to do with the woman walking beside him. As they reached the steps that led up to the cottage walkway, he realized that he'd wanted her to know who he really was, if only because he felt as though he already knew her.
After all he'd told her about his upbringing, it didn't feel right to end the conversation so abruptly. She motioned toward the cottage. Would you like to come up and have a glass of wine? It's such a pretty night, and I was thinking of sitting on the deck for a little while. A glass of wine sounds nice, he said. Hope led the way, and when they reached the back deck, she pointed at a pair of rocking chairs near the window. Is Chardonnay okay? I opened a bottle earlier today. Anything is fine. I'll be back in a minute, she said. What am I doing? She wondered as she went inside, leaving the door cracked. Never in her life had she invited a man up for a nightcap, and she hoped she wasn't sending mixed signals or giving him the wrong impression. The thought of what he might be thinking left her feeling unusually lightheaded. Scotty had followed her into the house and was eager to greet her, tail wagging. She stooped over to pet him. It's not that big of a deal, is it? She whispered. He knows I was just being neighborly, right? And it's not like I invited him inside. Scotty stared at her with sleepy eyes. You're not helping. She pulled two long-stemmed glasses from the cupboard and added wine, filling them both halfway. She thought about turning on the outdoor lights, but decided that would be too bright. Candles would be perfect, but that would definitely send the wrong message. Instead, she turned on the kitchen light, its diffused glow spilling onto the porch. Better. Glasses in hand, she nudged the door open with her foot. Scotty dashed out ahead of her and raced to the gate, ready to head to the beach. Not now, Scotty. We'll go tomorrow, okay? Scotty ignored her as usual while Hope approached the rockers. When she handed True his glass, their fingers brushed, sending a little shock up her arm. Thank you, he said. You're welcome, she murmured, still feeling the after-effects of his touch. Scotty continued to stand near the gate as she took her seat, as if to remind her of her real purpose in life. Hope was glad for the distraction. I told you we'll go out tomorrow. Why don't you lie down instead? Scotty stared up at her, his tail wagging expectantly. I don't think he understands me, she said to True. Either that or he's trying to get me to change my mind. True smiled. He's a cute dog. Except when he's running off and getting hit by cars. Right, Scotty? His tail wagged harder at the sound of his name.
I had a dog once, True said. He wasn't around long, but he was good company while I had him.
What happened to him?
You probably don't want to know.
Just tell me.
He was killed and eaten by a leopard. I found what was left of him in the tree branches.
She stared at him. You're right. I didn't want to know.
Different worlds.
You're not kidding, she responded with an amused shake of her head. For a long while, they merely sipped their wine, neither of them saying anything. A moth began to dance near the kitchen window. A windsock fluttered in the gentle breeze. Waves rolled ashore, the sound like shaken pebbles in a jar. Though he kept his gaze on the ocean, she had the sense that he was watching her as well. His eyes, she thought, seemed to notice everything.
Will you miss it here? He finally asked.
What do you mean?
When your parents sell the cottage. I saw the sign out front when I was dropped off yesterday.
Of course he did.
Yes, I'm going to miss it. I think everyone will miss being able to come here. It's been in the family a long time, and I never once imagined that it wouldn't be. Why are your parents selling?
As soon as he asked, she felt her worries resurface.
My dad is sick, she said. He has ALS. Do you know what that is?
When True shook his head, she explained, and added that there was only so much the government and insurance would cover.
They're selling what they can, so they'll have money to modify their house or pay for in-home care.
She rotated her glass in her fingers before going on. The worst part is the uncertainty. I'm scared for my mom. I don't know what she'll do without him. Right now she seems to be pretending that nothing is wrong with my dad at all, but I worry that it's only going to make it even worse for her later. My dad, on the other hand, seems at peace with the diagnosis, but maybe he's just pretending too, so that all of us will feel better about it. Sometimes it feels like I'm the only one worrying. True said nothing. Instead, he leaned back in his rocker, studying her.
You're thinking about what I said, Hope ventured.
Yes, he admitted.
And?
His voice was quiet.
I know it's hard, but worrying doesn't help them or you.
Winston Churchill once described worry as a thin stream of fear trickling through the mind that, if encouraged, cuts a channel into which all other thoughts are drained. She was impressed.
Churchill?
One of my grandfather's heroes. He used to quote the man all the time, but Churchill made a good point.
Is that how you are with Andrew? Worry-free?
You know by now I'm not. Despite herself, she laughed.
At least you're honest about it.
Sometimes it's easiest to be honest with strangers. She knew he was talking about her as much as he was about himself. Glancing past him, down the beach, she noticed that all the other homes were darkened, as though Sunset Beach were a ghost town. She took a sip of her wine, feeling a sense of peace coursing through her limbs and radiating outward like the glow of a lamp.
I can see why you're going to miss this place, he said into the silence. It's quite peaceful.
She felt her mind drift to the past. Our family used to spend most of our summers here.
When we were young, my sisters and I spent almost all of our time in the water. I learned to surf over there near the pier. I never got really good at it, but I was okay. I spent hours floating out there, waiting for a good swell. And I saw some amazing things. Sharks, dolphins, even a couple of whales. None of them were very close, but one time, when I was around 12 or so, I saw what I thought was a floating log until it surfaced just a few feet away. I saw its face and whiskers, and my whole body froze. I was too terrified to even scream because I didn't know how long it had been there or what it was. It looked like a hippopotamus or maybe a walrus. But once I realized that it didn't intend to hurt me, I just began to watch it. I even paddled to keep up with it. In the end, I must have stayed out there for a couple of hours. It's still one of the most amazing things ever to happen to me. What was it? It was a manatee. They're much more common in Florida. Every now and then there are sightings off this coast, but I've never seen another one. My sister Robin still doesn't believe me. She says I was making it up to get attention. True smiled. I believe you, and I like that story. I figured you might, since it featured an animal. But there's another really neat thing that you should see while you're here, before it rains. What's that? You should visit Kindred Spirit tomorrow. It's past the pier and on the next island, but you can walk there at low tide. When you see the American flag, start angling toward the dunes. You can't miss it. I'm still not sure what it is. It's better if it surprises you. You'll know what to do. I don't understand. You will. She could tell by his expression that she'd aroused his curiosity. I was planning to go fishing tomorrow. As long as I can find some bait, that is. They'll have bait at the pier shop, but you can do both, she assured him. I think low tide is around 4 p.m. I'll think about it. What's on your agenda tomorrow? Hair and nails for the wedding, and I want to find a new pair of shoes. Girl stuff. He nodded before taking another sip of wine, and another simple calm descended. They rocked in easy synchronicity for a while, admiring the glorious night sky. But when she caught herself stifling a yawn, she knew it was time for him to go. By then, he'd finished his wine, and again he seemed to know exactly what she was thinking. I should probably head back, he said. It's been a long day. Thank you for the wine. She knew it was the right thing, but nonetheless felt a faint stab of disappointment as well. Thank you for dinner. He handed her his glass before making his way toward the gate. She left the glasses on the table and trailed behind him. At the gate, he paused and turned. She could almost feel the energy emanating from him. But when he spoke, his voice was soft. You're an incredible woman, Hope, he said. And I trust that things will work out with you and Josh. He's a lucky man. His words caught her off guard, but she knew he'd meant them in a kind way, without judgment or expectation. We'll be fine, I'm sure, she said, as much to herself as to him. Pulling open the gate, he started down the steps. Hope followed him, stopping at the halfway point. Crossing her arms, she watched as he reached the walkway and headed for the beach. When he was a quarter of the way there, he turned and waved. She waved back, and when he was a bit farther away, she finally retraced her steps to the deck. She grabbed the glasses and brought them to the sink before padding to the bedroom. She undressed and stood before the mirror. Her first thought was that she really needed to lose a few pounds, but overall she was content with her appearance. Of course, it would have been great to have the kind of lithe body that graced fitness magazines, but she just wasn't built that way, and never had been. Even as a girl, she'd always found herself wishing that she were a few inches taller, or even as tall as either of her sisters. And yet, as she stared at her reflection, she thought about the way that True had looked at her, his interest in whatever she was saying, and the compliments he'd given her about her appearance. She missed basking in a man's obvious attraction to her,
without recognizing it as simply a prelude to sex. Even as she tried to sort through her feelings, she knew it was a dangerous way of thinking. Turning from the mirror, she went to the bathroom and washed her face. After removing the elastic band she'd used for her ponytail, she ran a brush through her hair so it wouldn't be knotted in the morning. Moving to her suitcase, she pulled out a pair of pajamas before hesitating. Tossing them back into her suitcase, she went to the closet and retrieved an extra blanket instead. She hated being cold at night, and slipping naked beneath the covers, she closed her eyes, feeling sensual and strangely content.
Sunrise and Surprises. Two ambled past Hope's cottage the following morning, carrying the tackle box with a fishing pole over his shoulder. He looked over, noting that the paint had begun to peel on a lot of the trim and some of the railings were rotting away, but thinking again that it suited him better than the house where he was staying. That one was too big and definitely too modern, and he still couldn't figure out how to work the coffee machine. Even a single cup would have been nice, but he supposed it simply wasn't meant to be. It was an hour past dawn, and he wondered whether Hope was awake. In the morning glare, it was impossible to tell if any lights were on, but there was no sign of her on the deck. He thought about her boyfriend and shook his head, wondering what the man was thinking. Despite a life spent mostly in the bush, even True knew that the wedding of a close friend pretty much mandated attendance on the boyfriend's part. It didn't matter how well they were getting along, or even if they were temporarily on the outs, as she had put it. Despite himself, he found himself imagining how she looked in the morning before getting herself ready for the day. Even with her hair askew and puffy eyes, she'd still be beautiful. Some things just couldn't be hidden. When she smiled, there was a gentle light about her, and it was easy to get lost in that accent of hers. There was something soft and rolling to it, like a lullaby. And when she'd been recounting stories about Ellen, or telling him about the manatee, he'd felt like he could have listened to her forever. Despite an overcast sky, the morning was warmer than it had been the day before, and the humidity had increased. The breeze, too, had picked up, all of which meant that Hope had been right about the possibility of storms this weekend. In the days leading up to rain in Zimbabwe, the air had a pregnant charge that felt much the same. There were already half a dozen men fishing from the pier by the time he started toward the steps, and he watched as one began to reel something in. It was too far away to make out any detail, but he took it as a good sign. He doubted whether he'd keep anything he caught. There was too much food in the refrigerator as it was. Nor was he in the mood to clean anything, especially since the knife in the tackle box seemed dull. But catching something was always a thrill. Entering the shop, he saw shelves filled with snacks and drinks crowding the center aisles. Along the back wall was a grill that offered hot food. Assorted fishing gear was perched on racks and hung on pegs. Near the door was a cooler with a sign advertising bait. True plucked out a couple of containers of shrimp and brought them to the register. There was a fee to fish from the pier as well, and after receiving his change, True strolled out the door, past a payphone and down the pier. Despite the overcast sky, the sun had broken through momentarily, glinting hard off the water. Most of the people were clustered near the end, and assuming they knew more than he did, he took up a spot in their vicinity. Unlike the tackle box, the fishing pole was in like new condition, and after baiting and waiting the line, he cast out into the water. In the corner of the pier, a radio was playing, something country western. Strangely, Andrew was a fan of Garth Brooks and George Strait, though True had no idea how he had ever encountered their songs. When Andrew had mentioned their names a few months back, True had stared at him blankly, at which point Andrew had insisted that True listen to Friends in Low Places. It was catchy, he had to admit, but nothing could touch True's loyalty to the Beatles. Whether consciously or subconsciously, True had selected the side of the pier that allowed him a view of Hope's cottage in the distance. He reflected on their dinner and walk, realizing that she had made him feel at ease the entire evening. For all their heady attraction, he'd seldom felt that way with Kim. All too often, he'd felt as though he was disappointing her, and even though they were now friends, there were times that he still felt as though he was disappointing her, especially when it came to the time he spent with Andrew. He'd also been taken with the way Hope had spoken about her friends and family. It was clear that she genuinely cared for all of them. She was naturally empathetic, not just sympathetic, and people like that struck him as rare. He'd sensed it even when they'd spoken about Andrew. Thinking about his son, he now wished he had postponed leaving for the trip, given that he wouldn't see his father until Saturday afternoon. It was odd that the man hadn't called to explain, but it irritated True only with regard to Andrew. He had awakened in the morning missing his son, and resolved to give Andrew a call from the payphone he'd passed. It would have to be collect, and the charges would be substantial, but Kim would let him reimburse her when he returned. With the time difference and knowing Andrew was in school and had homework, True figured he still had a couple of hours to wait. He was already looking forward to his flight home on Monday. Except, raising his eyes toward Hope's